You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today's the Monday edition. It's going to be shorter than usual. There are two stories I want to focus in on. One, I don't know what's going to happen. WikiLeaks, Julian Assange is holed up in the Ecuador, I think, consulate or embassy. There's a warrant out for his arrest in Sweden, and he's afraid of being extradited for the simple reason once he's in Sweden, he believes the United States would request from Sweden that he be extradited in turn to the United States. And the United States does want him because he's released a lot of documents, videos that were highly classified. So he's avoiding arrest both in Sweden and in the United States. That's why he's holed up in the Ecuador, I want to say embassy, but I think it's a consulate in the United Kingdom. And if he steps out of there, he will be extradited to Sweden. I give you that background because I'm sort of neutral in terms of WikiLeaks. What happens is a lot of people that have information want to release it to the press, but they want go-between, if you will, so they're not identified. So they have a number of ways to do it. They could take it to a newspaper, or in this case, they could take it to WikiLeaks. But there are other news outlets as well as people that have programs that if you want to get documents or your story out, you can. But the key with WikiLeaks is you don't know the source of the documents. Now, they make sure or try to make sure that these are genuine documents. Now, what he's been saying that he has documents that would put Hillary Clinton in jail and he would release it prior to the election. And he did release DNC, the Democratic National Committee documents, and it was a scandal. So he has credibility, at least up to now he has credibility. I don't know. I always say if someone has gone to the trouble to look at the documents, know it's incriminating, you release them as soon as possible. You don't hold on to them and tease people. So we'll find out. There's been some sources that know him that said he'll do this Wednesday. We'll see. And I'll report back to you Wednesday because our show Tuesday has been preempted because this is the first Tuesday of the month. On the first Tuesday of the month, the afternoon shows, which includes mine, are preempted by the Dallas County Community College District. They have their board meetings and other meetings that are broadcast over KDUX Web Radio, and it usually takes most of the afternoon, sometimes into the evening. So there won't be a Tuesday show. The next show will be Wednesday, and by Wednesday, by showtime, I will know for sure whether or not WikiLeaks has the goods and when are they going to release them. I'm not holding my breath. I'm certainly not going to stay up and all night and see whether or not he is going to release the documents. And I would not rely on this to be the Hillary Clinton killer, if you will. I'm just skeptical because there's a lot of public information out there that by now I thought she would have been arrested, charged, and on her way for a court date in regards to her handling of classified information. Well, that hasn't happened. And we're learning more and more that the so-called James Comey FBI investigation didn't appear to be a very good investigation. I think they got to James Comey, and as a result, Hillary Clinton has, at least up to now, been protected. And if you listen to the show, you know what I think is going to happen sometime between now and the last day of the Obama administration. Barack Obama will give Hillary Clinton a full and complete absolute pardon, and that gets her off the hook. Whether or not it will also apply to her immediate staff, we'll wait and see. I'm afraid that Hillary Clinton will not spend any time in prison, even though if she were anybody else, that's where she would be headed. It seems that the Democrats don't want to talk about this. Republicans do. I'm not a Democrat or Republican, but I believe in the rule of law, and I don't believe anybody is above the law. And Hillary Clinton, I think, has that attitude. I think she's known all along that she will not be prosecuted for her setting up of a private server, contrary to not only the rules, but the laws of this country, did not preserve documents, and has lied about it, saying that she never had classified documents when they found over 2,000, both that she sent and received. And that we've subsequently learned that fairly recently, there was over 33,000 documents that she did not give or hand over. They're gone missing. Now, what do you think's happening? You're not going to hand over documents that are incriminating. And I think that's what's in those 33,000. And the reason why she set up this private server in the first place is to cover her tracks. She knew what she was doing was either illegal or very, very embarrassing. It ever saw the light of day. So she didn't use a State Department email account and server that at least they make an attempt to encrypt the information and protect it from foreign intelligence agencies. And what invariably happened is one or more, and I think several, foreign intelligence agencies similar to the National Security Agency that's responsible for signals intelligence, they hacked her server and they have all the documents. And they will, in an appropriate time, use them. In other words, they have leverage on her should she get elected president. Now, they're not going to tell anybody that they've done this, but they have the information. But also, don't forget, the National Security Agency also has all her emails, all her communications. So if the next president is a Republican, he can task the National Security Agency to target Hillary Clinton as a national security risk, which she was. And then I think this can open up. Now, what would stop that? If President Obama gives her a pardon, and I think he will, and the precedent is the pardon that President Gerry Ford gave to Richard Nixon after he resigned the office. And people still, in retrospect, that was probably a good thing. I don't think we want a former president sitting in prison or being tried, even if has committed crimes. But they really, in my mind, pale in comparison to what Hillary Clinton did. And I think Hillary Clinton is underestimating the fact that you have Democrats, Republicans, independents that either have served in the military or serving in the military or an intelligence agency or law enforcement that know the procedures in the handling of classified information and know that if they did what Hillary Clinton did, they would have been prosecuted, fired, most likely fined and imprisoned for many, many years. And it doesn't sit well with the American people that follow this. We have one law, the rule of law, and it applies to everybody. No one should be above the law. Now, that doesn't mean there's a certain amount of discretion whether you prosecute. But in this case, they had an overwhelming case. And it's increasingly clear that the Department of Justice, together with the FBI director, made sure that she never would be indicted. Now, Congress is pursuing this. So it's not the end of it. And I think that will force this pardon from President Obama. So I don't know if Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are going to release documents this week or before the election that will convince everybody that she can be prosecuted. I sort of doubt that. They would really have to be damning documents. In other words, open and shut case. And usually when you're doing things that you're not supposed to, you don't typically put them in writing. It's handled by private conversations. So we'll have to wait and see. Wednesday, I'll get back on this story and tell you what happened. But I'm not holding my breath, and I'm certainly not going to lose any sleep waiting for WikiLeaks either to prove that they have the information they say they have or punt. I don't, frankly, trust Julian Assange, although a lot of the information he has released is credible. So what we're really relying on is his past record of being credible and having the documents he says he has and then subsequently releasing them. Now, I want to get back to what is in the news story and has been in the news for the weekend. And I've talked about this before, but I thought this was an excellent opportunity to, again, briefly review what's the problem that the United States is facing. The government is simply too big, and neither party, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, has the will, the determination, and frankly, the vision to deal with the problem. Government spending is out of control. The government has grown and grown and grown, and now it's become a drag on the economy. Now, to pay the bills, what does the government have to do? And how do they pay the bills? Either they can tax you and raise the taxes if they think they're not getting enough money, but that has consequences. Or they can borrow the money, and we've done a lot of that. Or the central bank, in this case of the United States, is the Federal Reserve System, it can create or print money. Technically, it doesn't print the money. It just creates it. It sits at a keyboard, buys something, and what it buys is treasury securities and issues money. So those are the three principal ways that the government finances or pays for the goods and services that the United States government and all its departments and agencies buy. But we've been running huge deficits year after year after year in the neighborhood of anywhere from $500 billion to over $1,000 billion, got up to $1,400 billion the very first year of the Obama administration. It has since gradually declined to this year. It'll be right around $500 billion. We'll know exactly, probably towards the end of October, at the very latest November, exactly what was the total spending of the federal government in fiscal year 2016, which ended September 30th. So the core central problem that's hurting the U.S. economy, and that's reflected in low growth rates, is that on all levels, but on the federal level, spending has grown and grown and grown. Now, as we came out of a recession, what happens? In a recession, tax revenues go down. Why? People are laid off. A lot of people were laid off, and when that happens, the deficit, in other words, the difference between what the government spends and what the government collects in all taxes, widens. So I'm not surprised that we had huge deficits, especially in 2007, 8, 9, 10, and 11, because tax revenues will be down. However, the recession ended in June of 2009, and since then the economy has been growing, but it hasn't been growing at what many people expected, rates of 3, 4, 5, 6%, which normally when you come out of a recovery and you're in an expansionary phase of the business cycle, you expect growth rates to go up. And as growth rates go up, what happens? The unemployment rates go down, the labor participation rate goes up, and then tax revenues increase. But we haven't had one solid year of 3% growth. And to put it in context, you need, historically, the United States over many decades has grown at around 3.5%. Depends where you start and where you end, but that's a fairly good, accurate number. And you would have expected growth rates, not that you could have sustained them, of 4, 5, 6% as you, the early stages of the recovery. Now, if the recovery began in July of 2009, we're now in the eighth year. We started the eighth year in July, and we haven't had one solid year of 3%. And the current quarters, it's around 1.2%. And at the end of the October, we will have the advance estimate for the third quarter. The economy has not gone into a recession yet, and I underline yet, but most economists would tell you, you typically have a recession every 5 to 7 years on average. And typically these recessions are anywhere from 6 months, 9 months, 12 months are fairly typical, and then you recover. We haven't had a recession yet. That's good, but we haven't had a robust recovery. That's not good. And it gets back to why. There's really two reasons. One is government spending, not only at the federal level, but local, city, state, county, have been increasing. That's one problem. The other problem is small businesses getting loans. The source of growth, the source of new jobs are your small businesses, especially new small businesses. Anywhere between 60 to 70% of the new jobs come from new businesses. Now, your large businesses started as small businesses, and they grew and grew, and if they're successful, that's what happens. And they employ more and more people, and they make investments. They expand their plants, equipment, stores, restaurants, depending on what business they're in. In other words, their plant and equipment, that includes computers, software, vehicles, as they grow. And that's what you want. In a booming economy where we're near full employment, in other words, the unemployment rate hovers around 3%, sometimes a little below, but typically in the 3 to 4% range, most people have multiple job offers. The economy is growing typically at 3, 4, 5, 6%, which you want. And that's all good. And the federal government benefits because when more people are working and businesses are growing, that means more tax revenue. It also means that as tax revenues increase, you expect that the deficit, the difference between government spending and revenue, would fall or would get narrower. In other words, the deficit would go down, down, and down. Ideally, you might even have a surplus. Well, we're not close to a surplus, folks. We've been running consistently deficits of over $500 billion plus, and in several years, over a trillion. In other words, $1,000 billion. We need to get our financial house in order. And I emphasize that first, and I talk about that first, because that is the problem. Is the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton or the Republican candidate Donald J. Trump, have they been talking about closing any federal departments? No, they haven't. Oh, they might have mentioned one or two, but when you're in the situation you're in, what do individuals do, especially if they're laid off? What do businesses, colleges, schools, cities, states, charitable organizations, churches do? They all have budgets, and they all know they need to, to stay in business, in other words, operating. They have to make hard decisions. They have to balance their budgets. They're not in a position, unlike the federal government, where they can issue treasury securities, in other words, debt, or print money. They can't do that. If you print money, you're going to go to jail for counterfeiting. And unless you're a very large business, if you're a small business, you can't really issue debt. You can take out loans at the bank if the bank will loan you the money. But the banks, after the 2007, 2008 into 2009 recession, they were rebuilding their capital base because they had major losses, mainly in the mortgage area. And I'm not going to get into that, but that the problem is, and what caused that recession was government interference, government policies in the housing area that enable people that normally would never qualify for any loan to get loans, that they subsequently they lost their homes. Because what did we do? We compromised on the standard. You see, when I remember getting my first mortgage, I had to put a stiff down payment, 20%. I had to have tax returns, proven up my income, had to have a good credit rating. But the government, under both Republicans and Democratic administrations, wanted to increase home ownership, even though it was at a historic high rates of in the 60s, 62, 3, 4% ownership. But they wanted to increase it more. And they put pressure on the banks to do that. And the bank said, well, fine, but we need money to make the loan. So Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bought those mortgages up. And we had a bubble, a housing bubble. And then the crash came because there were defaults. People lose their jobs. They can't even pay the minimum payment. And those so-called subprime loans were the problem. So were Alt-A. And again, I'm getting too far into this. But what the point I'm trying to make is, while there's a lot of blame going around, the initial cause of that recession was government interfering in the marketplace. See, I can remember where a loan officer in a bank, his career depended on him making good loans and making sure if they made a loan that the person qualified for it, can make the down payment, had a good paying job, had savings, had a good credit rating. All of that was thrown out the window because the government, both administrations, wanted the banks to make highly risky loans to people that normally would never get them. And that resulted in the Great Recession. And they're starting to do it again. Now, this leads up to something. The story in the news is about Donald Trump's tax returns. Most Americans, including me, could care less about Donald Trump's tax returns, and they're several feet high. And he has said he won't, because he's under audit and has been under audit for many years, he will not release those tax returns until after the audit is completed. Now, the IRS said, well, there's no rule that you can't release them. But what's going on here? And this needs to be said. I don't think it's anybody's business, including me, you, and the press, what Donald Trump's tax returns are. I don't think any presidential candidate, unless he wants to voluntarily, be required to release his returns. You talk to most Americans, is that their key concern? No, it isn't. They're worried about jobs. They're worried about the economy. They're worried about paying for their health insurance, Obamacare, which has failed. And later, sometime in the next 30, 60 days, I'll do a show on the failure of Obamacare. It was designed to fail. We had a working health insurance market that the government destroyed. Interfered again with the marketplace. You see, the failures that Democrats and to some extent Republicans want to blame on the private sector, the origin of those failures inevitably, in almost every case, the government caused the problem by interfering in the private enterprise market capitalist system. They can't mind their own business. Now, what's happening? The press, the media, I call them big lie media. It's mostly propaganda. Their agenda is the Democratic Party agenda and getting Hillary Clinton elected. They're trying to make out like Donald Trump has done something wrong. He had losses in 1995 of over $900 million. Remember, he owned casinos in Atlantic City, and when the economy goes sour or business is off, he lost a lot of money. In good years, you make money. In bad years, you don't. And like any smart businessman, you have what's called NOL, net operating losses, that you can either carry back 3 years or carry forward 15 years. So when you have this large loss, for many years afterwards, he paid no taxes. Think of it as income averaging. Why, there's many years that he has income. He didn't have to pay taxes because you can apply those losses and offset any taxes owed. And this is routinely done by businesses, whether it's Apple, Caterpillar, Cisco, and others. This is routinely done by small, medium, and large companies. Business owners know this. You don't want to lose money. I'm certain Donald Trump would rather that be a profit of over $900 million. But it makes a point. When you start your own business and run your own business, you'll have years when you're very successful, when the economy is booming, your sales are up, you're growing, you're hiring people, you're expanding your operations, you're investing in plant equipment, buildings, office buildings, retail space. That's what you want because that's where the jobs are. That's where the jobs are created in the private sector, not the government sector, the state sector, the private sector, by businesses that risk their money, they risk their time, they risk their energy. And in good years, they do well. In bad years, they lose a lot of money. And many of them go bankrupt, go out of business. Donald Trump is a success story because he turned it around. And many people are defeated when they have a huge failure like this. They never really come back. But Donald Trump did. He is very much a success story. You see, the problem I have with all this press coverage, most of the people that are reporting are employees. They've never run a business. They certainly never started a business, founded a business. They don't know that the hours your typical entrepreneur, and that's the name for people that do this, risk all their capital, their savings. Sometimes they start businesses on credit cards. They borrow from their families. They borrow from their friends. And many are successful, but many fail. And once they fail, it's hard to come back. Some do, some don't. Donald Trump is a success, whether you like him or not. That takes a certain amount of courage, fortitude. It takes, dare I call it, genius. And yes, people are going to get hurt, no doubt about it. But every day, there are people starting businesses in this country, and every day, businesses are failing, going into bankruptcy or selling out or trying to sell their business. Very, very few businesses last 100 years. You can count them on one hand. They're either merged into other companies, or over a period of time, they decline and then eventually are bought out or shut their doors. And one of the reasons is uncertainty caused by what? The federal government. And one of the biggest, there are two big areas. One is the constantly changing tax laws. You don't know. You can't plan ahead. And good businesses try to plan ahead. They need to know what their cost of operations is going to be. And they have to pay their taxes. And it's not just federal taxes and payroll taxes. It's not just income taxes and payroll taxes. It's also state, county, city. And Donald Trump paid those. And remember, people, thousands of people have worked for him. They pay taxes and they had jobs. That's why you want to encourage the formation of businesses and you want to encourage both savings and investment. We, unfortunately, in 1913, ratified the 16th Amendment that gave us the income tax system. Initially, it was to sock the very rich, and I mean the very rich. 97% of U.S. citizens were not impacted. Now, today, over 50% are in terms of income tax. Anybody that works has to pay payroll tax. So taxes, if they're not done right, and the income tax system is a perfect example of not how to do it right, can put a drag on the United States economy, which means we have high unemployment rates, persistently high unemployment rates, and low labor participation rates. You see, if this economy were booming today, the labor participation rate, and I mean booming, would be over 67%. It is under 63%. And the unemployment rate wouldn't be 4.8 or 4.9 or 5%. It would be around 3%. That's if the economy were really booming. It's not. The so-called U3 headline unemployment rate dramatically understates the number of Americans that are unemployed. It's really at least double, if not triple. And there's anywhere from 10, 20, I would even say 30 million Americans that would and want a full-time permanent job but can't find it for various reasons. Over the years, what has happened? More and more manufacturing jobs have gone overseas. And the American people know this. And manufacturing jobs were good-paying jobs. Not easy jobs, hard jobs. But they were generally good-paying jobs that now are no longer in the United States. We need to make fundamental changes to our tax system. A number of economists, and I agree with them, were asked, design a tax system that would encourage savings and investment, would encourage productivity, would encourage capital formation, that's efficient, it's fair, and transparent. And this was many years ago, too many years ago. There's a general agreement, I won't say a consensus, because there's never consensus among economists, that a broad-based consumption tax is the way to encourage growth and reward productivity. Now, there's different ways to accomplish that. One way is a flat tax. At one time, I was for a flat tax. In other words, everyone would pay the same rate, and the income tax code and regulations would be much simpler. But you would still have an income tax system. In other words, our tax system would be based on income. But there's a better way to do it, and that is to tax consumption. In other words, when you go to a store, a retail outlet, and buy a new good or service, you would pay a tax. Now, some people call this a national sales tax, and it looks like an additional tax. And that's why I resist this. A better way to look at it, and an important way, and you need to get this in your head from the very beginning. You need to replace our personal income taxes, our corporate income taxes, our capital gains taxes, the alternative minimum tax, our gift and estate taxes, and yes, and let me emphasize this, payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, disability. You need to replace, which means abolish, all those taxes, every single one of those taxes, and replace it with a single broad-based consumption tax, and it's called the fair tax. And if you go to my website, companion blog for this show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com, that's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. Under my picture, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. This is show 768. Under that, I have a number of videos, background information on the fair tax, as well as taxation in general, the American dream, and the fact that businesses, employers in the private sector are the main job creators, the main wealth creators, the main income creators. And to the extent that they're successful, what does that mean for the government? It means more revenue for the government. And the government needs revenue. It's short, quite a bit. If we want to attract businesses, not only U.S. business and investment, as well as foreign businesses and investment back into the United States, you need to provide a very strong economic incentive to relocate here. We can't compete with low-wage countries. We can't compete with countries that don't care about clean air and clean water. And I don't want a country that doesn't care about clean air and clean water. And I want the jobs and the compensation for those jobs to be as high as possible. And every American that wants to work can find a good paying job and actually have several choices. That should be the goal. But it's not going to happen as long as we have a tax system that's based on income. And it's not going to happen where governments routinely run massive deficits that require more and more debt and more printing of money. And let me remind you, although they're not printing or creating money now, if we should go into recession, it's only a matter of months before the Federal Reserve will go back to creating money called quantitative easing. That's not an answer. Unconventional monetary policy, so-called the near zero interest rate policy, is a big part of the problem. Governments as well as banks were hurt as a result of the failures of investments that they made. So banks, especially ones that invested in mortgage-backed securities, not only in the United States, but in Europe and around the world, were hurt. And many of them should have failed if it weren't for aggressive monetary policies by the Federal Reserve and the central banks in other countries. You see, I look at a recession as where those that mismanage or misallocate resources pay a price. That price is insolvency. That price is bankruptcy. The people that screw up pay the price. They lose their jobs, they lose their benefits, their salaries, and other businesses buy or take over their firms. And usually they get them at bargain prices for the simple reason that's all they're worth. However, what happened in the last recession? Commercial banks, investment banks, insurance companies, auto part companies were all bailed out. The taxpayers paid for those bailouts. That is not free enterprise market capitalism. You can have several labels for it. I like crony capitalism. The people that were bailed out, you've heard the term too big to fail. They screwed up. They mismanaged their assets. They took risk. Oh, yes, they were misled, for example, by government-sponsored enterprises, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as to what their exposure was. And many of those investments tanked or are worth pennies on the dollar and will probably, unfortunately, do it again. We don't seem to learn from past history. What I'm recommending is we need to quickly transition from a tax system based on income that we've had for a little over 100 years and go to a broad-based consumption tax, very much similar to but not identical to what the Fair Tax Organization has put forward. And you have upwards of 100 House representatives, senators that support it. It's long overdue. It's not going to happen until we have a president that invest his political capital in doing this. The reason I recommend it, first and foremost, it rewards productive people. It encourages people to save and invest because there are no capital gains. If you invest wisely, the gains are yours. If you risk your money and make poor decisions, the losses are yours. There's no bailouts. We need to encourage entrepreneurs to take the risk, investing their time, their energies, in starting new businesses and running new businesses. Many will fail, but many will succeed, and some will succeed even beyond their imagination. That'll happen if we have a economic incentive, in this case a tax system, where everyone pays the same rate. Everyone knows what the rate is, it's transparent, and it's on new goods and services. It's collected when you check out. And let me explain what I'm talking about. By an example, a simple example, but it gets the point across. If you go to a grocery store, you can buy a loaf of bread for $1. At least in Texas, you can. Not the best bread, but it's usually the store brand, maybe even 99 cents. But let's, for keeping the math simple, it's a dollar. Right now, in that price of bread, embedded in that price of bread, are all the taxes, the federal taxes that companies have to pay. In other words, whether you know it or not, in that dollar price that you see on the shelf, it includes all the costs that businesses incurred to get that loaf on the shelf. And that also includes the profit for the grocery store and its cost. What changes? If we replaced all those taxes, income taxes, personal and corporate, partnership, gift, estate, capital gains taxes, alternative minimum taxes, all federal taxes, and payroll taxes, replaced all those taxes. They go away. They no longer are there. You don't have to pay them. Instead of that loaf of bread being a dollar, it would be about 77 cents. So on average, about 22-23% roughly in a price of a dollar loaf of bread includes all those taxes. Now, some of you are asking, okay, we do away, we abolish all these taxes. We still have to run the government. Yeah, we do. And that's what a broad-based consumption tax is. Now, some will call it a sales tax. I don't like to call it a sales tax. Why? Many people immediately think of a sales tax as an additional tax. No, this is not an additional tax. It's to replace all the taxes that are already in there, but we're changing the basis of taxation. It's no longer income when you get paid. It's when you spend your money. That's why it's called a consumption tax or a spending tax. It's not what you earn, it's what you spend. So an individual can determine when he's going to pay the taxes. When he buys a new good or service, he will be paying taxes at the rate of 20%. And that 20% will be in the price of the good. So your price of bread will be a dollar, actually probably a little slightly less than a dollar. So nothing has really changed except, first of all, your gross paycheck is your paycheck. There's no more withholding. There's no more deductions for Social Security, Medicare, disability. In other words, no more payroll taxes. The business owner doesn't have to pay the payroll taxes either. So your gross check is your check. And some businesses might very well increase your pay because they don't have to pay the payroll tax, their so-called share. Some will keep the money, pocket the money, but others will give it to you. Because if they don't have to pay payroll taxes, they can give you a raise. They might and they might not. They might reduce prices of goods. It's up to them. So everyone knows, every consumer, every American citizen knows what the tax is. It's 20%. You go to the checkout with that one loaf of bread, you pay a dollar. Just like you're paying a dollar now, you pay a dollar. But what's different is that retailer sends that 20 cents, that 20% of a dollar, 20 cents, to the federal government. What normally would happen is they would send the sales tax and the federal fair tax or consumption tax to the state, and the state in turn would send it to the federal government. And the retailer would get a very small fee for collecting it, because that's what they're doing. They are collecting the tax, and they'll be collecting it 24/7 as people buy goods and services. So it's a lot more stable system, because if you have a recession, what happens? People no longer have income, so they're not paying income taxes and they're not paying payroll taxes. And to the extent that business is down, businesses are not paying taxes. And if you're like Donald Trump and have a really bad year, you have a big loss, you don't pay any taxes, and you take that forward up to 15 years forward, three back. The other good thing, there's no tax returns. You don't need them anymore. And keep in mind, currently, it costs businesses primarily, in terms of compliant cost, an estimated $500 billion, $500 billion, which just happens to be about what the deficit is this year. As far as I'm concerned, that's wasted money. That's why it's very inefficient. That's money that typically business owners of small, medium, and large, as well as individuals, have to pay to calculate what their taxes are. In the case of Donald Trump, you have a stack of papers over 3 feet, and he has CPAs, tax attorneys preparing that. Don't think Donald does that. It's complicated. That goes away. That's an immediate savings to the U.S. economy and those businesses of $500 billion. Keep that in mind. That's a big number, folks. We don't need the IRS. You can abolish the IRS. What are they going to do? They can't audit returns. There are no more tax returns. Oh, yeah, we'll keep probably a couple of hundred government employees still working in the Treasury, making sure that the states send in their consumption taxes. But you don't need tens of thousands of auditors, clerks, looking over paper. That's an immediate savings to the government of tens of billions of dollars. So no more tax returns, no more compliance cost of $500 billion and keeps going up, up, and up. No more Internal Revenue Service. So a consumption tax is fair, it's transparent, it's 20%. But I know some of you are saying, wait a minute, what do you mean it's fair? People of low income or no income, it's not fair. They have to pay 20%. Well, first of all, they're already paying it when they buy a loaf of bread or anything else. They are. But I forgot to tell you the good news. The complaint that it's not fair is saying, well, the incidence of taxation falls, it's greater on low income. And that's correct, because a sales tax is very much regressive, as is Social Security or payroll taxes. They're both regressive. Now, to address those critics and to truly make it fair, and I'm emphasizing this, there's a prebate that every single American citizen would get, adult American citizen. And I need to be very clear here. What I'm describing is my version of the fair tax, which I call fair tax less. Because the fair tax organization, their rate is 23%. The rate I'm proposing is 20. They also have a prebate, but it's less generous. It's tied to the poverty level. It gets a little complicated. And every man, woman, and child would get a prebate. It's less than $1,000 for two parents with two kids. Fair tax less is very generous. There's a reason for it. You want to encourage people first to work hard and spend their money, but you want to give them a strong incentive to first, for example, invest in themselves, education, invest in a house. In other words, save their money and invest. Be productive. In other words, be a hard worker. Have a strong work ethic. So the 20% rate, let me use an example. Let's say an individual, a single person, has a good paying job and he spends $60,000 a year. Oh, he has money to save, but he spends $60,000. Now, what is his tax on that $60,000? Well, it's 20%. Everybody pays the same rate. 20% of $60,000 is what? $12,000. However, he's getting every month a $1,000 check as a prebate to pay for what? The consumption taxes on the essential goods and services that you need to live. I'm living in Dallas. You need a roof over your head, so you're either going to pay rent or have a mortgage payment. You're going to need a car to get to work. You're going to need clothing. You're certainly going to need food, electricity, water. And the price of all that does vary depending on where you are. If you're in New York City, you pay a lot more. If you're in Dallas, you pay less. And if you're out in a rural area, you probably even pay less. The key thing to take away is with a prebate of $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year, that would offset $12,000 of consumption tax. Now, make it very clear, when you go to check out, they don't care where you got the money, but they will be collecting 20%. But because you've gotten over the year $12,000, your net tax is zero. It offsets the $12,000 tax you pay. Now, if you spend more than $60,000, you're still going to be paying the same rate, 20%, but there's no offset. So the consumption tax is very much progressive. It depends on how much you spend. Now, what's the benefits? Encourages work. It encourages productivity. It encourages business formation. It encourages savings that you need to encourage investment. In other words, you would have a booming economy and U.S. companies that now have anywhere from $2 trillion to $5 trillion in cash that they've earned on businesses abroad would have a very strong incentive to what? Relocate back into the United States, because the United States would have the best tax system in the world. That gives us a huge advantage, because there's no tax on capital and there's no tax on income. You'll have a real estate boom, because as businesses expand, what do they need to do? They need to build plant, equipment, stores, offices, and plants in the manufacturing sector will come back. That's how you make America great again, by having a tax system for the 21st century, not a legacy tax system. The income tax system that we have today is grossly inefficient, too complicated. No one understands it. Both Democrats, Republicans, and independents don't like it and complain. and jack the rates up and down, causing uncertainty, which businesses don't like. If we want to grow America at rates at least 3.5%, 4%, 5%, we should, as quickly as possible, next year would be wonderful, go to a broad-based consumption tax. I've outlined my version of it. I call it Fair Tax Less. There are a number of videos that the Fair Tax Organization has come out. They're largely the same except for three areas. The tax rate for Fair Tax Less is less. Instead of 23%, it's 20. And go back to that loaf of bread. 20% of that dollar is the tax for $1. Obviously, if you buy $2 bread, it's still 20%, but you're paying 40 cents in taxes. It's not an additional tax. It's replacing all the taxes that were there already, that were embedded in it. And I emphasize this because that's probably the hardest thing to get through people's heads. They think, well, this is just an additional tax. No, it's not. And here's an important point. Once the American people, and I think this would take only a couple of years, see the benefits of a broad-based consumption tax with a low rate, and I'm not happy with 20%, but you got to start somewhere. Some would want it lower, some would like it higher. But here's the important point. I know Congress has to pass this, both the House and the Senate. So the details will change. The rates will change. So will the prebate. I'm for a generous prebate. Every adult American citizen, I'm underlining citizen, 18 years of older, will every single month get a check for $1,000. Now, that's not welfare. That's not a new entitlement program. That is to make the consumption tax progressive, which means for the first 60,000 of goods and services, you pay no taxes, whether you're Bill Gates or someone that's unemployed. The rich are going to spend a lot more than 60,000. The very rich will spend millions. And that's the point. The more you spend, the more taxes you're going to pay. Even Bill Gates says, don't tax my income, tax my consumption. And he's right. What are the rich going to do with their money? They really have two choices. They can spend it, in which case they're going to pay taxes, or they can invest it. Either way, it benefits you and me. If they invest it, what does that happen? Businesses will expand. That's what you want. You see, if you want a full employment economy that's growing at sustainable rates of 3%, 4%, 5%, and I think we could, we need to get certain things right. One is the tax system. That's what I'm emphasizing. Keep in mind, no more tax returns, no more compliance costs. April 15th is just another day. No more IRS. And if you ask Americans, and people have, how many days in a week should the American people work for the government? You know what the answer typically is? One day. Not two or three, not half a day, one day. If you work a five-day week, 20% is that one day. Now, the beauty of this tax is once it's in effect, the American people will not want to go back to this terrible system that we have today. I call it the legacy income tax. It is dragging this economy down. It's discouraging business formation. It's discouraging investment. It is discouraging work, savings, and investment. We need to shift to a system of taxation that encourages, provides a positive incentive for all of these things. Everyone wins, including the government. Yes, there'll be a period of transition. I'm for making it as quick as possible. Why don't we have it? I'm sure someone's asking that question right now. Because the owners of this country favor the status quo. Over this 100-year period, what's happened? The tax code and regulation have changed and become more and more complicated. Why? Because you have companies, industries, even individuals that benefit by certain provisions included in the regulations and code today. It's called the status quo. People don't like change. Even when you go over all the benefits, they simply resist change. And they're resisting this even though there's upwards of at least 100 representatives and senators that are for this. We need a president that will advocate for this. And if we had it, Donald Trump wouldn't have tax returns. Oh, he would benefit. But every time he spends his money, he's going to get taxed. And if he invests his money in building new buildings, developing real estate, his gains are his. The American people would resist and vote, resist any politician, Democrat, Republican, no matter what their party, that would want to go back to this lousy, corrupt, inefficient disaster of an income tax system that we have today. We need to scrap the current Internal Revenue Code and the regulations and throw it in the trash can. There's already a bill in Congress, H.R. 25. It's about 100 pages long that implement the Fair Tax version, not my version, but the Fair Tax Organization version. I think you can make it better. That's why I came up with Fair Tax Less, because mine, more generous, admittedly more generous, and I don't know what Congress will pass, probably something between what I would like to do and what the Fair Tax Organization wants to do. You need to make it simple so that people understand it. It's easy to sell. I can explain it in less than a minute. The tax is 20% on all sales of new goods and services. It replaces all federal taxes, income, estate, gift, capital gains, alternative minimum, and payroll taxes. And everyone gets a prebate of $1,000 a month. That's an adult American citizen age 18 or above. So if you have a husband and wife, they each get $1,000, $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year, and their first $120,000 would not be taxed. It's a winner, folks. Why don't we have it? Because the powers that be, the people that own this country, have resisted. They don't like change. Nobody likes change, even when it would dramatically help all the citizens of this country and even most likely generate more revenue for the federal government. We need to do this quickly, not keep arguing about and keep changing up and down the number of tax brackets, the tax rates, and the provisions of the code and regulation. I used to play that game. And I used to be for the flat tax. Get rid of the income tax. Scrap all federal tax laws. Replace it with one single tax that's simple, fair, transparent, and you'll get a dramatically growing, booming an American economy. And that's what we need if we want to make America great again. So I hope Donald Trump or Mike Pence or both hear this. I know Mike Pence is familiar with the fair tax, and he supported it many years ago when he was in Congress. We need change. We need to make America great again. And the first step is to have a tax system for the 21st century that is simple. I think anyone can understand it. It is very much fair. Everyone pays the same rate at 20%. Everyone gets a tax prebate of $1,000 a month. Every individual. American adult citizen 18 years of age or older. No more tax returns. Your gross pay is your pay. No more IRS. And if you invest your money, you save your money, invest your money, any gains from those investments are yours. It's not taxed. We want to encourage savings and investment so we don't tax them like we do today. We would have probably the most productive economy in the world, the fastest growing economy of the world, and the American people will be cheering for the leader, the person running for president, that comes out four square for this. Oh, he'll be opposed by the lobbyists, the special interests on K Street that are paid by the firms and industries across this land. The irony is, if they would give it a fair hearing, they would also see that in the intermediate and long run, they would benefit immensely if they got behind this. We need to do something to change the direction that this country is heading. We're going down the road to serfdom, and we can't continue year in, year out, having massive deficits that results in higher and higher levels of the national debt and higher levels of unfunded liabilities. Keep in mind that the biggest single tax that Americans pay today, I'm talking individuals, is the payroll tax. It's not the personal income tax. The bottom 50% of taxpayers pay less than 3% of the income tax. It's the top 10% that pay nearly 60%. All those income taxes would go away. The government would be funded by this broad-based consumption tax. And remember, in a recession, people might not have a job, but they still have to spend money. We would also collect taxes from people that are engaged in illegal activities because they have to spend money. I go over this and have with a number of people, and they all like it. It's not perfect. There's certain risk, but most of the problems is just making that transition. It's about time that we made that transition. And the sooner that we do this, the faster we'll reap the benefits. And keep in mind, this has been studied by professional economists, and they came up with the idea of a fair tax with a prebate. All I've done is made some minor changes to make it even better. And I'm sure people in Congress will get in the act and make changes. I have no pride of authorship, but we need to move to a broad-based consumption tax with a low rate. The lower, the better. And after a period of years, I would hope that the 20% rate would go down. But that depends on cutting government spending that we must do if this nation is to survive. So this is a way, if Donald Trump would be bold, this is what I call a game changer. If he would propose this, he would win in a landslide. Now, the time is getting rather short for him to do this. It is a change in direction, even for him. But keep in mind that there are American people that support this. There are people in Congress that support that. Even his running mate, I think, knows the wisdom of having a broad-based consumption tax. Maybe Trump will get bold. If he's going to do it, he needs to do it soon. And if he does, no more tax returns, Mr. Trump, and your real estate empire would go through the roof, and people would be investing again across this nation, starting new businesses where the jobs are created. And yes, even the government benefits by growing revenues. And we reduce the size of the government by abolishing the IRS. And no more $500 billion and growing compliance cost. This is a winner for everybody. You would think by now that the followers in Congress, at least one or two, would be leaders. There's some leaders in this, both in the House and the Senate. But you need a president to get behind this. So what I urge you to do is review some of these videos. I have a lot of them, but if you take the time, I hope, and I'm fairly sure, you'll come to the same conclusion. And you'll probably be asking, why didn't we do this many years ago? Why indeed? You need a leader to accomplish this. A representative, even though there are many that sponsor H.R. 25, is not enough in the House or the Senate. You need a president that has a sense of urgency, understands taxes, has a vision for this country to implement this. Whether it will be Donald Trump or somebody else, I don't know. But the sooner we do this, everyone benefits. With that, here's America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com
and KDUCKSWebRadio.wordpress.com.